Hello, and welcome to today's Tenant Cloud podcast. My name is Chris Flugi, and I am your host. My goal in each and every episode is to provide you with incredibly valuable content filled with real-world insights from highly experienced landlords, property managers, and real estate investors to help you become a more informed, better educated, and successful landlord. In today's podcast, I sat down with Joe Edgar, the CEO of Tenant Cloud, regarding one of his latest pieces on entrepreneur.com, where he wrote a step-by-step guide to making your first million in real estate in 6 short years. In this article, he breaks down how even someone with an incredibly busy schedule and real-life adult responsibilities can still make their first million in just 6 short years. And even if 6 years sounds like a long time, don't despair. As you'll hear from Joe, the more open your schedule is and the fewer responsibilities you have, the quicker you can make your first million. Let's listen in. This podcast is based on the article that you recently wrote for a step-by-step guide to making your first million in real estate in 6 short years. And a lot of people have found a lot of value in that article, so figured we would break it down a little bit here in this podcast. And so I appreciate you taking the time this morning to join us on this Friday morning. Tell me a little bit about it. Is this article written mostly based on reasonably attainable hypotheticals, or is this written from your personal experience?
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely taken from a point of view of hypotheticals. I actually did it in less than 6 years, but
okay.
I think when I looked at it, I mean, I had some advantages in my, court. So for me to pull it off, I was very young. And so even though I grew up dirt poor, one of, 13 kids, and my parents had no money and were broke. And so I had more debt to my name than I had, assets. The one thing I did have going for me is I didn't have a wife. I didn't have kids. I didn't have, basic responsibilities. And so when I say that, not that a wife or children are a hindrance, but I just mean I could take a substantial amount of risks and only have me to care about. And so I did that as a young person. So I bought my first investment property at 14. And then I created lots of unique things to do it. And a lot of those times it meant I slept on dirt in some of these houses I worked in. And I slept in the back of a car, transporting between fixing them up and doing things. It meant I had to be on the cheap and do all of the labor. And sometimes those are 18 to 20 hour days where I've had houses fall on me and lots of things of like that. So you could say, I was able to do it much faster, but it is really because I had those resources of, just having to be me. And so when you take it in perspective of, someone who is, young and, she has a husband or he has a wife and they're now married and they have some kids and they are trying to find financial stability, then I kind of reverse engineered that and said, you could do this exact same thing that I've done. And if you have a job and you're carrying on, you could easily, pull this off in 6 years with, just a little bit of focus and a plan.
So your step-by-step article is more of a realistic timeline for people who are already full-fledged into their adult lives, living a pretty normal life as an adult with kids and family and all that good stuff.
Exactly. It is, an American dream, if you will. But I think everybody, what the definition of American dream is, I think for all is to be able to, have a plan and be able to work for that and get ahead. And so this is one version of, we can pull off the American dream and getting there. And it doesn't take a lot of savvy. I mean, there's one additional thing that I had. My father was a contractor. He swung a hammer, and my mother was a janitor. She cleaned churches. And so we were the labor force. And so I learned at a very young age how to swing a hammer and how to build. So, I had to do all of those maintenance things. And I know a lot of people now, there's a lot of that stuff that is beyond, Minnie's ability, one, because they're a professional at something other. And so I had to take that into consideration. And I think that's a mix where it does take 6 years, but you got to find maybe a different house where I literally would start from the ground. So I'd buy a vacant lot, very cheap, and then build a house on it. And I would do everything from electrical, mechanical, plumbing, the roof, every single thing was literally me. And so I saved a lot of cost on those. And so when I sold that in 2 years, I got the entire gain. And so I know that that's not realistic for most people. So looking at it, in a way to kind of do that as a, something that's reasonable is kind of where the article came.
Sure. And so when it comes down to that, basically what I guess I would take away from that is there's a lot of sacrifices and there's a lot of work put into it. So sacrifices and a lot of work, and that same timeline can be attained by just about anybody.
Exactly. Yeah, but I think, it comes down to lots of things. I still drive a minivan, and I drove my beat up minivan until
there's nothing wrong with minivans.
Crashed it. Exactly. But I do think that's kind of the start of it is you really have to sit down, especially if you're a married couple. If you're single, then you can take this plan and you can, put it on steroids. But if you're married with a family, it's something you really want to sit down with the whole family and get everybody behind and really say, okay, where do we want to be in 6 years? Let's put together a 6-year plan. And some of those things you may have to miss out on is like, okay, well, look at our cars. I mean, I hate cars. I really do, because I think it's just one of the places that people go wrong so often. They're very expensive and they lose value from day one. And they really don't provide that much. I mean, you have them sit most of their life while they lose value. And so they are ultimately just a worthless thing that you drive around as a status. And so getting past that is hard, but I think people do, because you can buy a $2,000-$3,000 beat up car that'll last you a good 12 to 18 months before you buy another one, and you are saving a tremendous amount of money. So sitting down as a family, just saying, okay, we're going to go through some things. Maybe we don't buy that super mega mansion. Maybe we buy something that we're only going to live in for 2 years and it may turn into a rental. And, it's not going to be amazing and we'll have to do some work on it. We'll have to, do a lot of, and I don't mean the hard work. I just mean the light stuff. Like, we'll have to do the landscaping. We'll have to do the fence. Maybe we'll be doing the painting. Maybe we'll change, a few things on the inside. A lot of that's the softer side of really fixing up a property, but it does take the whole family's commitment to kind of get there in, 6 years. And so, it does require that conversation of saying, we're going to go through some sacrifices, like you said, and those sacrifices are going to be, living within our means, which should be something that should just be part of our culture. But, that does require a lot of conversation, because that is a sacrifice for what could be a very nice retirement as you get older.
Yeah, I'm right there. My wife and I are right there right now. I actually just replaced the entire plumbing fixture underneath my kitchen sink. I've never done plumbing in my life.
I love it. And I know a little more about you, Chris. I know that you've actually kind of done something similar. You bought a piece of property. You did a lot of the work yourself. There's parts of it I know, and this is where it's a balance. Like, there's parts you don't know, so definitely get a professional. So you had that subbed, but in even cutting costs, you were the general manager, so you didn't hire a general contractor for it. You hired the subcontractors. And so you kind of were the project overseer and the manager. And then, you were able to now move your family, into that house. And that's just phenomenal, because you've done even more than I think a lot of people can do, just because there's a skill set involved in there and a lot of work that had to go. And you were doing it like on weekends working. So I think you're the ideal place that this article is kind of directed at even. So it's a lot of fun. And I don't know if you know many of the laws that kind of go around what you're doing. But just to recap, did you do the foundation yourself?
Yeah, we did everything like that on our own.
Nice. So you did the foundation, lay the flooring, got the walls in, the roof, and then you had somebody do, was it plumbing or electrical?
Yeah, so we hired the contractors to do the plumbing and electrical so that we would have proof that somebody licensed did it.
Yep. Got it. So in Texas, it's unique because most of the things are not regulated. So it means for mechanical, electrical, and plumbing, they are regulated. So there is a licensed person. But in most states, and I really mean this, I believe it's even in all 50 states, there is a provision where if you do all the work yourself on your own home, you don't have to have someone licensed. And so that's how I did it. And the only contrast is in most states. So for Oregon, California, Washington, New York, and I believe Florida, I just know those. But for those states, if you do the work yourself, you have to live in it for 2 years. Or at least the law is limiting that you cannot sell it for 2 years. And that happens to match some other parts of your plan. So there are things like that a lot of people don't know. You can do a lot of this work yourself. However, I'm not advocating that, because if you feel that you don't know how to do it, then definitely you don't want to make yourself have a, you know, a fire one. But I grew up doing a lot of this. So I was very comfortable and putting together a lot of electrical. I've built now quite a few homes and done them all. But what matches, so you've done this all yourself. Do you know when you bought that piece of property?
The initial property purchase was about, I want to say, a year and a half. It might have been 2 years at this point. It's very close. I know that.
Nice. Okay. So, I mean, the reason I ask is there's a few dates that, you know, no matter who you are kind of in this position, you want to keep track of a few different dates. One of them is definitely the date you purchased the property. The second one is the date you occupied the property. And the one in the middle is the date the property could be occupied. And so for your case, it makes more sense. But for someone who's buying a house that's already built, then a lot of those will be the same date. And so, for example, the date you occupy the property starts a 2-year clock. That's really important. And this is in regards to the IRS. And so you want to keep track of the day you moved in. It's really important because this becomes your primary residency. And as your primary residency, the IRS will allow you and your wife or significant other to have up to $500,000. That's $250,000 for each of you of capital gains free and clear if for your primary residency, if you've lived in it for 2 of the past 5 years. And so as part of this plan, for you to maximize it, it would mean, you know, when it gets time to about, you know, you're at 18 months, you want to start thinking about selling this thing now. because I'm not asking for her to give any realistic numbers. So maybe we come up with some play numbers. Let's say you bought the piece of property, you know, for $50,000. And let's say you put $100,000 into building the house. And so you are out of pocket right now for $150,000. And let's say you moved in at the beginning of January 1st. Are we okay with those assumptions?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, awesome. Okay, so then let's say January 1st, 2020, you moved in and you're going to stay there. And over time, you're now going to do some things like, I don't know if you have, you know, a yard laid out or your driveway or landscaping or fencing. Let's say you don't, and you're going to start doing that stuff. You're going to make it look like, you know, a well-groomed, nice home. And so you put some value, and maybe you're going to start, you know, finishing off some of the things in the house. If it's anything like mine, chances are your finished work was not finished. it would often take me right before it sold to finally finish that stuff. And literally, we moved out and then did the work. And so I have many, many houses, as my wife can tell you.
You are describing our house perfectly.
Nice. And that's typically how it is. And I think that's one of the sacrifices you as your family, you know, you have obviously made that decision, but I think it's one that others have to go through. It's like, okay, it's not going to be this amazing place. It's going to be something we're working on over time. We have 2 years to kind of get this to a point where we sell it. But let's say now, here we are in, you know, September of 2021. So a year from now. And you're looking at the calendar and you have, you know, 3 months left. And so you're like, you know what, let's start talking about putting this thing up for sale. And so you've done a lot of work in it and you put it up for sale. And, you know, the agent is saying, well, you know, this house will probably go for between $300,000 and $350,000. And I'm just throwing, again, numbers out there. Now, the thing you want to add into it is the day you moved in it, remember, is January 1 of 2000. So you want to make sure that the close date, so you can start to sell it before, but you want to make sure the close date and you are living in it up to December 31 of 2021. And so you meet both requirements. One, you have lived in it for two of the past 5 years. And if you've done any work that you're claiming on your own, then you've also guaranteed it for the 2 years. So you're meeting both of those requirements. But then when you go to sell this house, what would normally have cost you a pretty hefty bit in capital gains. And so the gain, and over the 2 years you're in it, you're probably going to put some more work and some more expenses into it. And so one quick question that I'll just tackle, because people ask me this all the time, and it's apparently not too intuitive, but once you get it, you'll be like, oh, that makes sense. People often ask, like, should I be charging my time when I work on this house? And so there's cost you buy. You go to Home Depot, you buy some fencing, you put it in, and there's the time you spent. So a lot of people are like, well, should I be keeping track of my time? The answer is no, because if you are keeping track of your time, then one, you now have to file a 1099 for that, and you have to pay FICA taxes on your payroll. And it didn't benefit you. It just reduces the amount that you're going to get. And chances are you're not going to be over the $500,000 in gain. So your time is not something that's kept track here at all. Only things of which you have a direct receipt for. Keep track of your stuff on a receipt. Make sure you keep track of them. And the other question I get a lot is about depreciation. You know, am I depreciating that? On your primary residency, because you're going to take this all as a free capital gains tax, you're not depreciating anything on your primary residency, which is why you have to keep track of your receipts. So keep track of all of them. Picture it as just a big money hole that just keeps adding up, and that is it until you sell it. And so you're keeping track of all your receipts on anything you do to your house. If you buy a screen, if you, you know, are going to paint some trim, things like that, keep track of all those receipts, because they all go into what is called your cost basis. And those are not dependent on the date. So remember, you got to move in, and that's dependent on a date. Your clock has started, and everything else is more the cost that went into this. And so when you go to sell it and you have a buyer, I think I said $350,000 or something. So remember, you're in it for $150,000. You're going to sell it for $350,000. So you have this gain of about $200,000. And let's just say that includes all the costs you encountered over the time. So normally, if you were doing capital gains, you'd have, you know, kind of a double hit here, because you would have to pay at least 20% of that in taxes, which I'm sure some are like, hey, that's great if I get the gain no matter what. And yes, that's the game we play. But then you would also be bumped up on your annual gross income because of that. So you get hit kind of twice. And so the value of this is because if you are married then and you jointly own this home and you filed jointly, then you can now have a gain of up to $500,000. But you can see in this scenario, you don't need it. But you will eventually. And so right now you're like, there's only a gain of $200,000. And so not a dime of that has to go to your AGI, nor does it have to have a capital gains tax paid on it. It's yours free and clear, 100%. So by doing this, within 2 years, you put some work in it, and now you're literally sitting on $200,000 in gain cash. And why this is so impactful and powerful is, as you'll find as we go through the story on things you're doing, when you get into rentals, having an ability to get to cash without it being taxed, without messing up any of your other strategies is really important, because you're going to start using loans soon, but you needed to build up that core equity. So let's say the first $150,000 you didn't have by saving it up, you borrowed it. Let's say you saved up maybe 10 and the rest was borrowed. So this really allows you now to pay off that and start again, but this time with your own money. Right? So now it's not borrowed. So you're going to start to do this exact same thing. And so you've started a new house. And this time, as you complete this house, your second one, and you're kind of building on it, and you've got it and you've moved into it, you now have a legitimate house. You didn't have to stress about getting a loan. You didn't have to do anything. You used your own money. You didn't. Please don't. You didn't go and buy a bunch of cars. And man, I have talked about this with so many people that I stop telling people and I don't give them financial advice. So talking about this is almost, you know, hard because so many people have done this where they get a little taste and immediately they do things that they have just committed themselves not to do. And, you know, things go sideways for them. So don't do that. Steady the course, stay cheap, be a miser. And your next one, you've built this house, you're living in it now. And oddly enough, it may sound strange what I'm about to say, but on your second house, so this is like, you know, January of 2021 is when you're looking at your next piece of property, right? So your clock's not going to start there. And unless you can get a loan, you can do this much faster. But I'm just saying staying within a reasonable time period is when you're finding your next piece of property, or another house that you're going to fix up and you're moving into it. So you got a new clock started. Well, you're going to now refinance that piece of property because your clock is done. It's started. You're waiting your 2 years. But you want to leverage the asset that that house is entirely. And so its benefit is now growing because the most important thing is moving into it, owning it, and sitting on it for 2 years while it appreciates in value. And so you're now going to take out a loan. And even though that seems counterintuitive because you're like, I just got rid of my loan to do it on my own. But that's the next piece. You're going to take out a loan. And with that funding, you are going to buy a rental. You're stepping into the rental world. And some people will do this same strategy and not sell that first one. That can work, but you'll see your primary residency is different than your rentals. And you want to make sure to keep them separate. And I just say that in the sense that you'll want that cash to replenish some loans. And so that's how I did it. It works a little fast that way, but you can do it in a mixed ways. So you're looking at now a rental. You buy the rental. And as you buy that rental, you're looking for something that's pretty, you know, everyday, very common. And the house you're living in is as well, very everyday, very common. And so you want houses that sell to the masses. So that's why I say avoid the McMansions, avoid picking crazy colors, find things that, you know, sell easy and people, you know, the most amount of people like. And so I always look at kind of a working neighborhoods, and that's really where I often would build and buy houses is because they would sell the fastest there.
So I probably shouldn't paint each room of my house one yellow, one purple.
That would be my recommendation. You could talk to my kids. My kids would definitely tell you that that is, you know, no fun. But yeah, I mean, you can see that any house I've ever lived in, I'm very boring. It's all brown, tan, beige colors. And the outsides are all, you know, a white or some kind of basic, you know, grayish color. So they're all like everything you can, the most average home you can ever imagine. I really avoided putting any character into it. And it really does take a family culture to do that. And it is hard on the family and it's worth conversation because this is where the family really has to be behind it because you're doing some things that, you know, you're moving through houses a lot. And sometimes people don't want to do that. So it's not a strategy for everyone, but it's definitely a way to, you know, gain wealth. But yeah, you're right to the point of some of the downsides of doing this, but sure. Yeah, the upsides are your retirement.
Yeah. And I would think that it would also for families with kids, it would be one of the stumbling blocks or obstacles to that could be the fact that you're probably not going to find these properties in necessarily the same school district either. So you could potentially be moving around quite a bit and your kids might be moved around schools. But again, that's comes down to, I think what you started off with, which is there are, like you said, I think you said it very well that you have to have a conversation with your family and everybody has to be on board with the process because there are going to be sacrifices that you're going to have to make along the way. In addition to all of the hard work that you're going to have to do, there are sacrifices and not just one person ends up paying that sacrifice. A lot of times everybody pays a part of that sacrifice.
Well, I wouldn't even say a lot of time. It's almost always, but you're spot on. I mean, it's a family sacrifice. So yeah, it is it's a friend base Sometimes it's your local church. Sometimes it's your local grocery store. I mean, yeah, a lot of times those things change. There's convenience in it too. I mean, you're not looking for the most convenient neighborhoods. I mean, we had to live in a lot of, you know, out of town suburban neighborhoods because that's where we could find, you know, the deal. And what's nice about right now is you're looking at an opportunity that everyone has, even though you're hearing that single family rentals are flying off the shelf through, you know, even through this pandemic, you're going to start seeing these deals pop up. And so it's a great opportunity to say, hey, maybe this is us. Maybe we can do this. You know, if you're a family that is currently, you know, maybe three paychecks away from foreclosure, if you lose your house and you're living in a, you know, a $300,000 to $500,000 home, then you're perfect to kind of do this. I mean, think of downsizing and finding a neighborhood where, you know, you can buy something that does need some work. You're not a professional at the, you know, manual labor type stuff in the house, but, you know, you spot some stuff that you can do. You know, there's the fence you can fix up, you can paint, you can straighten up the dormers, things over the next 2 years that you can work on. And those are the type of deals that you should be out looking for. And sometimes they're not even for sale. You got to go and find the owner of an old abandoned house, see if they'd make a deal for you. So
yeah, I've actually, there's even a few tools online that I've recently found for doing just that, that I found interesting that you can look up. I mean, you can do it the hard way. You can do it the long way going through city and county records and stuff, but there's actual software out there now that actually will find all of that information for you. And they'll even have records of like if the utilities and stuff have been used in the house recently and all kinds of data like that. It was very, very eye-opening looking at that data because it basically told you, here's a property you should reach out to because these people look like they're not living there and haven't lived there for 2 years.
Doing that, I mean, it's just such an opportunity right now because you are starting to see, so forbearances are going on, these new structures that are going on with the banks, you're starting to see these increase. And so, you know, it's a sad thing to see economically because you're seeing some foreclosures happen, but, you know, you and your family have to look and say, okay, well, what situation are we in? I mean, those houses are going to go up for sale no matter what. And so for you to put yourself in a situation where you're like, maybe I can get out of the one we're in and find one that's smaller and downsize a lot of this, and we can actually be debt-free and be worth, you know, a net of $1 million within 6 years. I mean, that's realistic. It's all a matter of just making the mental note of like, okay, we're not going to live this, you know, high in the hill kind of, you know, borrowed money living.
Sure.
Kind of feel from there. But yeah, it's very possible, especially right now.
So to recap, just to recap what we've just been talking about, the general guidelines or the general concept behind this 6-year plan is essentially you buy that steal of a deal, cheap place that you can immediately create value on that piece of land, whether you buy a blank piece of land and you build on it, or whether you find just a steal of a deal house that needs a lot of work, you live in it, you fix it up, and you basically cause forced appreciation on that property to where you do all of these things to improve it, and it just immediately creates value in that property year after year, everything you do to it, which is kind of what we're doing to our property now. We don't currently have a fence, but that is one of the things we're actually about to do, is to start putting in a fence. And we added a small garage to the property, and we're planting trees on the property and all that good stuff. And so those, all of those
sprinkler system in, some landscaping.
Yeah. And each of those things is going to create value on the house. And then the goal after that is to then, one of the ways that you can do it is you can then sell that house, and then you buy a house that you're actually going to live in. And then you buy a second property at that point, which is a rental. And then you just keep, it's a domino effect from there, essentially.
Exactly. And remember, I mean, you're putting sweat equity into the house, and so part of this is your capital gain that you don't have to pay at the end. You know, part of that is your sweat labor time. So you're actually getting paid quite a bit, even though you don't think of it that way. But yeah, it's all kind of built in for this 2-year clock.
So with that being said, I guess one of the last questions I would have on the topic is, what would you say to people who today may be doubting that they are able to do something like this in the next 6 years, or maybe they're just discouraged by what might seem to a lot of people as a very lofty goal? What would you impart to those people who have those thoughts?
I'm mixed in response because, one, if you don't believe you can, then don't try. but, you know, to help with those who think they can, or to try to help those who don't, maybe convince themselves that they can, is, you know, it's pretty straightforward. There's not much to it. I mean, it is out there and it has a lot of value, and there's really not much you do. I mean, imagine jumping into an investment that does it itself. Real estate has grown over the last 100 years at 3% a year on average. And that, you know, so if you've taken all those years when it went down in 2008 and then has recouped, it's regained it. So you're talking about something that just keeps going. It's a train. It's not going to move. And so getting on the good side of that is important. And I know a lot of people are kind of debating between, you know, should I rent or should I buy, especially right now that's coming up, because now people are looking at their payments, rents are going down, and they're like, oh, should I rent or should I buy? And that debate is a great debate for someone who is going to be at par, which means if you're accepting the status quo, you're just looking for a place to live, then there's a lot of argument why renting could actually save you money. But if what you're looking for is, you're like, listen, I'm trying to grow value, and by growing value, then the house that you're going to be looking for is different than one that you would rent. And that's what's important. Is like, if you're going to rent, then you're like, all right, I'm paying for some standard, but I'm paying for it, so I'm a customer and I expect something for it. But now if you're stepping in, you're like, I want to grow value, so I'm going to buy a house. Now you're looking for a deal. And so in that case, then you're probably even trying to find one that's less than rent. And, you know, really come down and figure out a way you can get a deal so you can do a little bit of fixing up. And if you have no skill whatsoever at all, zero, none, you'll be shocked at what you can still pull off over a 2-year time period. It's a lot of time and you can spend a lot of Saturdays. There are so many YouTube videos that explain everything in detail now. And so things like just looking at the landscaping and say, what can we do? I mean, just a rake and a shovel for, you know, 4 weekends, you can do a lot to a yard to improve its value if that's all you're able to do. But even if you can no more than just have an idea of what wants to be changed, then as you well know, some of the things you can be the general contractor. So you can save a little money, which is a value increase just by being the general contractor, which means if you're like, okay, it needs a new roof, you manage hiring the roofer. Believe it or not, if you hire a general contractor, the general contractor, what they do is they manage all the subcontractors. And so the subcontractors are going to get paid about 60% of what the overall job is paid. And the general contractor is going to keep about 40%. And so you're going to be saving those costs just by going direct to a subcontractor. And sometimes you find those subcontractors just by walking around, seeing somebody work on a job and talk to the actual workers. And that's how you can, you know, get under some of those. But those are the type of things. Maybe you see paint and you don't know how to paint, so you hire a contractor yourself to kind of do that work. I mean, even if that's all you're going to do, you're still going to have some savings in there because you are doing it. And so, yeah. And then the fact that you don't have a tax at the end is just an amazing benefit to, you know, not take advantage. It's phenomenal. And so each time you do this, what's nice is as you do it over the 6 years, each time you're doing a little bigger house, a little larger. And the reason is, and you're moving up neighborhoods and you need to, because your total tax benefit is $500,000. So ultimately you hope to be selling $1 million home that costs you, you know, that you, you know, your costs were about $500,000. And if you can get to that point, that's fantastic. And that's where you're really raving. That's why, you know, when I did it much faster. And it was really just about, you know, the house and how fast I got into it and how quick I was able to pay off debt and how cheap I was willing to live. And so that's why I was able to accelerate it. But yeah, it's very simple. If you have any inclination, I mean, I hear people talk about get rich quick schemes all the time. And I laugh, you know, everything from network marketing to not. I mean, what I'm talking about is not a get rich quick scheme, but it is a solid plan. And if you've ever wanted to hear of one of saying, you know, 6 years to become a millionaire, I mean, this is pretty foolproof and pretty easy. And so for 6 short years of your life, it can benefit you, the rest of it, and your family. So it's something you really shouldn't ignore. And there's multiple ways to have different variations of this. So, you know, for instance, you could slow it down and make an 8 to 10 year plan. Very easy. You could also, like I said, you can make this a 4 year plan. So there's lots of ways to go about this. There's lots of places to do it. I know everyone has different confines. Like I work in this part of the city, I have to be here, so I'm limited to this. And, you know, that, you know, plans change and, you know, there's different variations. But nonetheless, having a place to start and go through it is important. And knowing when to kind of start this is important. And we're just in an economy right now that warrants talking about this, because this is where a lot of families could be looking back in 6 years and say, I'm so glad we sat down and as a family made this an objective, because you know, here we are 6 years later and by far better prepared for our future.
Is there anything that you would say that as a last question that we have not discussed on this podcast that you think is a valuable question or a valuable piece of information that needs to be addressed before we close it out?
Oh, I mean, there's lots we haven't covered in that, but I think that's the heart. The one thing I'll add is I did the article on Entrepreneur about a year ago, and I've had so many, it sparked so much interest and a general following. So I'm doing another one that's kind of a follow-on to that in Forbes here that should be out in the next month or so. So it's one just to carry on top of that and talk about the current market. You know, basically it's echoing the same thing, but a little tag on with a little more detail. So, you know, look for that coming.
Awesome. Fantastic. Yeah. I would love to talk about this all day long, but I know our podcast, we usually try to keep them to 15 minutes and this one is way over that. So, nice. But I do appreciate you taking the time to, give all this information and kind of expand on the article that was already written. And, definitely we'll keep an eye out for, I believe you said it was that Forbes article. So, I appreciate you taking the time to chat on the podcast, and we'll look forward to talking with you on the next one.
Sounds good. And good luck with the house, Chris.